Well, thank you, Diane, and good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here, and I appreciate you stopping by to hear some thoughts I'd like to share with you this afternoon. What I'd like to talk about is seven environmental challenges facing Michigan, talk about perceptions a little bit on those issues and what I think are facts or reality, and some policy recommendations that some of you might be interested or want to consider as you debate, discuss, and work on those types of issues. There is much fiction surrounding environmental issues in Michigan. If you look at any poll of residents, generally people will say they think conditions are getting worse. However, the empirical data, whether it be in land, air, or water, will conclusively show that, in fact, we have a better environment than we've had in many years. Air quality, water quality has improved dramatically. There are certainly challenges to be faced, but the perceptions and the reality on this issue often are far, far apart. It's interesting, I think, more so than in many public policy issues. So let's get into it. What I'm going to do today, I'd like to just make a couple introductory remarks, and I'll handle this sort of by media. And the reason I'm doing that, air and water quality, water quantity, waste issues. The reason I'm doing that is, for good or bad, that's the way our laws are structured in this country, environmental laws. I think most of you know that most of our environmental laws are relatively new, came into being about 1970. And we have federal laws, which the states implement on behalf of EPA. Michigan is no exception to that. There are also state laws passed, but much of what is done in environmental protection from a regulatory standpoint is done through federal delegation on the Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act, and et cetera. Let's start with air. Perception is that air quality has gotten worse in Michigan. What's driving that is we have been in attainment for all the criteria air pollutants, including carbon monoxide, ozone or smog, sulfur dioxide, fine particulate matter, all of the major air pollutants which we measure, monitor. We've been in compliance now for a decade, which has been a tremendous achievement in an industrial state like Michigan. However, environmental groups and others have been saying quite vociferously the last year that the air is getting worse because Michigan is out of compliance. What's the reason for that? If you'll look at any chart of the empirical data, the air emissions have gone down. They've gone down even during the 90s. They've gone down every year. Even during times of heavy economic expansion, the standards have been changed. So the goalposts have been moved. And let me explain. We had a standard for ozone, which was 120 parts per billion, measured over 1 hour. The new standard is 80 parts per billion. So it has been lowered significantly. The result of that is about 25 counties in the state of Michigan will be out of compliance, including the county we're sitting in, Ingham, with the ozone standard. So that is going to have significant ramifications on the state of Michigan in terms of economic development. Interestingly enough, as I mentioned, even though emissions are going down, the standards changed. If you were to take and shut down every smokestack in the state, if you did not allow anyone to drive an automobile in the state of Michigan during the summer, you would still see background levels of ozone at 50 or 60 parts per billion. The new standard's 80. So you don't have to have a PhD in environmental engineering to figure out quickly there's not much room for error in that level of standard. So that's why so many counties will be out of compliance. Well, let's look at what's the policy that Michigan should be looking at as a result of that. First of all, it would be helpful to understand that about 50%, and I'm using approximate numbers here, of the air emissions in the state of Michigan come from the mobile side, tailpipe, the other 50% from stationary sources, manufacturing, utilities. So it's about half and half. I would advocate that as the Michigan legislature deals with this very tough issue, it's going to be extremely important that we come up with a balanced portfolio of reductions. If the onus is borne on the smokestacks, that will be a very, very heavy constraint to manufacturing. On the other hand, with many tailpipe programs and others, which can be very politically unpopular with the public, there's some difficulty there. We have an opportunity here in Michigan to do these reductions at the least cost possible. And one way we can do that is to ensure that we use the air trading rule that Michigan passed some years ago. And without spending a lot of time on that, basically the way that works is one source can trade with another source where it may be cheaper for that source to do reductions and sell those credits in the open market. And that's less cost for everybody, more flexibility, and has the advantage, of course, of overall reduction in air emissions. What I would suggest that we look out for is attempts by groups or even by state agencies to make that a very difficult rule to use, to put so many constraints on that rule that trades become very, very difficult to do in the marketplace. And if that happens, of course, people don't do the trades. It's not in their best interest. We don't get the reductions, and we end up with a much higher cost, transactional cost of doing business. The other thing that I would quickly say in this before I move to another topic is we do have the opportunity in Michigan, which some other states have taken, to use innovative programs and not necessarily just look at more onerous regulations piled on top of regulation. Vehicle scrappage, or more commonly called cash for clunkers, anybody heard of that program, is one that's been very effective, for instance, in California, in the state of California. And that's entirely a voluntary program. It's not mandated in any form. But vehicles that are old, which are the highest polluters, are purchased to get them off the road. Only vehicles that are registered and being driven, not ones collecting in somebody's backyard. But I think those, I just use that as an example, those types of innovative programs can get a lot of credit with the federal government, can reduce air emissions, and can do it in a way that doesn't penalize Michigan's competitiveness. Let's move to water quality and excuse me, and talk about that quickly. Again, perception is that water quality is getting worse in the state and that there are more beach closings. Fact, the water is actually cleaner by any long-term quality measure. There is a huge difference between point and non-point pollution. For those of you not familiar with that term, point pollution would generally come from the end of a pipe. Non-point would be diffuse sources. It might be runoff from construction areas or agricultural. Michigan has done a magnificent job, probably one of the best in the nation due to the importance of water in our state, of dealing with a point, the end of the pipe discharge. The remaining issues that are primarily dealt with in Michigan are non-point. That's the diffuse runoffs, much, much harder to deal with. Let me just say there that the wrong thing to do is to try to deal with that the way we've done with point pollution. And to try to have a very strict regulatory regime is not going to work very well in those sources. And I think many, many people recognize that. Certainly I know many staff in DEQ have recognized that over the years, but yet there still is a tendency, and there will be political pressure from various interest groups to say, well, this worked for the end of the pipe, so let's do it that way for farms. Let's do it that way for subdivisions or whatever. That should be resisted. That's not going to work well. What that's going to lead to is a heavy, heavy bureaucracy, slowly getting things done, and not a lot of water quality improvement. An example of that would be combined animal feeding operations, CAFOs. You hear a lot about that. I strongly, during my tenure as director, resisted putting those all the farms in this state under permit. Now, I didn't resist that because I don't want clean water. I resisted that because I didn't believe, and still don't believe that that's going to be effective. We have a tremendous opportunity to work cooperatively with agriculture in the state to reduce water quality. It was always interesting. I was under a lot of pressure to issue permits for discharge. They're called NPDES permits. Some of you may be familiar with that term. But yet Michigan law says you're not supposed to discharge to the waters, period, from an agricultural operation. Yet people wanted me to issue permits allowing discharge. That would lead to a huge bureaucracy and is not going to be effective. And we will need to look at working very closely in the agriculture community. If I had time, we'd talk more about strategies than that. We'd be happy to take questions and discuss that further at the end. Let me say that in water quality regard, the other point that I'd like to make from a policy standpoint, and this is not understood quite often, But if agency gets water quality monitoring reports continuously, it's required by law. And if you will look at those at any given year, you will find that industry is cleaner than municipalities. Now, I don't want to offend any of our municipal friends here, but the fact of the matter is actually private sector does a better job consistently in managing water quality than municipalities do. Now, there's a lot of different reasons for that and a lot of different types of dischargers, so I'm not trying to pick on municipalities, but I would say this. There is a tremendous opportunity that other states have taken, which has not been used much in Michigan, to look at private operation of many of those resources. And talking to my peers, other environmental commissioners around the country, over the years, they've had very good success with that in a lot of locations of major cities. Michigan ought to be looking much more heavily in that direction. I think the cost can be less. The bureaucracy can be less. We all know we've got huge problems with the Detroit system. We could do a whole day talk on that. I won't go there. So I think, again, there is opportunities there, and we should examine those. Let's talk about land quality. I think that's a issue sometimes we hear is land use. Again, perception. Michigan has an urban sprawl and is running out of open space. Fact is, most of Michigan remains undeveloped. Forest cover has actually increased by 2% during the last 20 years in the state of Michigan. That's amazing when you actually look at what's going on. We have more forests now than we did 20 years ago. Less than 10% of Michigan is developed. Less than 10%. And yet we seem to hear that land use issues have become sort of the boogeyman for every possible ill that we can be faced with. And I would submit to you that that's vastly oversimplifying the problem. And there certainly are ways to develop things smartly and with minimal impact, and a lot of those things make immense sense to do, but we need to start really looking at what we're doing here with land use. One thing that I would, a couple things I would think people should really look at hard from a policy perspective. First of all, is I would at all costs stay away from central planning. That didn't work in Eastern Europe, and I don't think it'll work in Michigan. And if you try to create a land use agency at the state level, or a land use czar, or whatever you want to call it, you're setting yourself up for great difficulty. Local government should be making those types of decisions. That's why we had zoning. And I would argue that local government is the highest level of government. They are the most accountable to the people that they represent and serve. I don't think you want somebody in Lansing making land use decisions in your home district. Even worse, you certainly don't want that done in Washington. Does anybody here want Washington to make those decisions? I don't think so. And so we need to be careful. I know regionalization is a common buzzword. You hear that a lot. And there could be advantages of regionalization, but there's also could be significant disadvantages. We need to talk about both sides of that equation. One thing that I'd be very concerned about in regionalization is that we don't create, again, more bureaucracy. Sometimes it is difficult enough for those of you that have to interface with government to do it with a government that you know and can work with. And when you start making that larger, more distant, with more hoops to go through, we have to be real careful about that. Brownfield redevelopment needs to continue to be encouraged. We've done a good state. Michigan has generally been rated the number one state in the nation for that. We've passed the right laws. We need to keep implementing and funding those. I think most people agree we ought to try to reinvest in our cities and use that infrastructure wherever possible. But let me say this, as hard as I worked on that, as many of you know, and I worked with some of you in this room to help write that law, change that law, and actually go to a true polluter pay in 1995 away from a deep pocket pay that we had prior to that, when we made those changes and we worked on that really hard through the years and put a lot of resources into it, we still knew that that was not going to be the answer. And I think what the answer is much more complex. Brownfield redevelopment is a piece of that, but what is critical is that we get the basics right in our cities. We need to get the basics right, and that means we need to have safe cities, and we need to have good schools, and we need to have low taxes. And when those cities, I don't know if you want to call them cool, call them whatever you want, but when those cities operate and they're attractive places for people to live and raise their children and invest their lives, then those cities will be successful. And you can have every grant program in the world, and you can try to do every kind of incentive in the world, but if you don't have the basics right, I don't believe it's going to work. The other thing on land quality perception, Michigan is not adequately protecting its wetlands. Fact is, all wetlands are not created equal. And we have a problem in this state because we try to save every postage stamp size wetland. And we have an answer to that. We passed a law back in the 90s. We need to use that law. We need to encourage it. States like Florida have done a great job with it, and that's wetland mitigation banking. That is a win for the environment, and it is a win for developers. Because what that does is allow, on a commercial or for nonprofit, either one, profit or nonprofit basis, create a wetland, 640 acres, 1,000 acres, whatever size. And then when somebody needs to develop, they can buy credits from that bank. And that is much more flexible for the people doing the development. And it is also much better for the environment because you actually have a functioning ecosystem rather than some little piece of wetland cut off by a freeway in southeast Michigan. So we really need to use that. We need to get smart. That won't work everywhere. There are certain high-value wetlands, coastal marshlands, and other things that you can't mitigate, but I'll tell you those are the exceptions. They're not the rule. Most wetlands, in fact, a lot of wetlands are areas that have been that weren't wetlands, have been left alone, and maybe they're low, and they now have plants growing on them or classified as wetlands. So we've got great opportunity there, and we need to do that. The other thing I'd say on wetlands is it is imperative that the Department of Environmental Quality, Department of Transportation, state agencies respect private property rights. And I have many discussions over the years with my staff on that. And there is a tendency to somehow think, I think, in government sometimes that only government has a solution to those, that people can't not be good stewards of their own property. Certainly people need to follow the laws that are written, but there needs to be respect for that private property ownership and a willingness and ability to work with the people that own that land to accommodate what they need to do at the same time protecting the environment. Water quantity, perception. Michigan is not protecting its groundwater, leading to potential groundwater shortages. Fact, Michigan has abundant groundwater supplies and is not in danger of groundwater shortages. It's interesting that you will not see, for instance, auto assembly plants in Phoenix, Arizona. I grew up in Phoenix, went to high school in Scottsdale. I don't remember a single auto assembly plant. We simply did not have the water out there for that. No state east of the Mississippi River allocates groundwater. No state. The exception being Minnesota, who half the western half of Minnesota is arid. The eastern half is semi-humid, and they do have a water allocation program. It is common to see water allocation in the arid west. When I worked for the Arizona State Land Department many years ago, the single largest division in the entire state bureaucracy was the people that allocated water, a huge undertaking. And why would we want to do this in Michigan? We have passed a law. We've dealt with the issue of mitigating where there are concerns. There can be local impacts on groundwater from heavy withdrawals. We need to address those. We need to have good hydrogeologic studies done. We're also addressing that as a state. I think that's a positive thing. We do not need to hire 100 more state employees to tell everyone they need a water permit before they can use groundwater. That's not going to have an environmental advantage. It's going to create more government. And I just cannot understand why we'd want to do that. The other thing that I would say that in any scheme that's debated, be very careful about the discussion of trying to measure surface water and groundwater interface. And to try to keep that not too technical, my background is I'm a geologist, but there are heavy, heavy amount of variables, many variables in surface water. Any familiar with the Perrier or Nestle now, Nestle issue in Big Rapids, where they bottle the water plant, bottles of water, and we issued that permit under my watch. By the way, that was a slam dunk decision, technically, for the agency. Very prolific aquifer. At the amount being withdrawn, we had very good hydrogeo data. We had very little concern about that. A judge recently, a local judge, did an injunction against continuing to operate that plant. The appellate court is now dealing with that. I predict it will be overturned. the bar is set so low by this judge that you wouldn't be able to process cherries, do any kind of economic activity at all in the state. But one of the things I found fascinating in that decision, and it is, you ought to read that legal decision, by the way, if you haven't. He goes on about his trips with the canoe and his daughter getting married, and read more like Gone with the Wind or something than it did a legal decision. But all that aside, he was concerned because the water was lower when he was with his canoe and issued the decision. Since then, the water is above historic levels. And the danger is many, many factors and variables in groundwater discharge and the interface between surface and groundwater. Without getting too technical and going further into that, you should avoid that pitfall. Exotic species. Perception. The ecosystem of the Great Lakes is being destroyed by the introduction of exotic species. Fact, there is a serious threat to the Great Lakes by the introduction of exotic species. I don't know that it's, I would go so far as to say it's being destroyed, but it is a serious problem. The zebra mussel is a poster child for that problem. I think you're all familiar with the zebra mussel. Now, some people like that because the water's clearer, but it has affected the ecosystem of the Great Lakes. And, of course, we're all concerned about what's the next zebra mussel. Have you all heard about the flying Asian carp? You might not want to be in a jet ski if a flying Asian carp's in the vicinity. But we have these exotic species, which we're very, very concerned about. Let me say this, though. The shipping industry is an environmentally friendly industry. We transport on the Great Lakes many, many tons of various commodities, whether it be coal or iron ore or whatever. I would not want to see that many trucks put on our streets, our interstates, transporting all that material with all the associated air emissions and other. So it's a very friendly industry. But we do need to get those ships sanitized. The St. Lawrence Seaway is the entry point into the Great Lakes. We've got an opportunity to do that. We need to do it. We do need the help of the Coast Guard. And so I think this problem needs to be addressed. The only other thing I'll say on that is let's not make the mistake on this issue that we've done on a lot of environmental issues. Let's set the standard. Let's make them get the job done. But let's not tell them how they have to do it. If they want to use chlorine as a process, which we do with our wastewater discharges and know a lot about, or if they want to use some other system, let the various shipping companies innovate as long as they meet the standard. Let's not prescribe how to do it. And I think that would be a mistake. I'd like to finish here before we open the questions with an issue on waste. And I think that's very pertinent to our discussions here right now, because there's a lot, there's legislation being introduced on it, and a lot of people are dealing with the issue. Perception. Michigan is running out of landfill space. The importation of Canadian trash is leading cause of the problem. Fact, there is not a shortage of landfill space in Michigan. Now, I've always found, probably as environmental director, one of the most frustrating issues to deal with was trash. And I have a theory on that. Part of the reason I think for that is environmental issues generally can be very difficult for the public to understand. They get awful technical. And by the way, the United States of America has the most prescriptive top-down command and control environmental regulatory system in the world, bar none. I've been in Germany. I've looked at their system. I've been in Canada. Nobody does it to the prescriptive manner we do. But people can understand trash. You know, they take it out to the curb, they know it goes to landfills, etc. There's important things to remember, though. It would be a serious mistake to attempt to try to close our borders to the movement of trash. We export and have exported for many years more hazardous waste to Canada than we import. And we move trash between bordering states all the time. The Interstate Commerce Clause considers it a commodity. Now, I don't like what Canada's doing. I suspect most of us don't, because I think they're not being responsible in terms of dealing with their issue. But I think the solution to that is a political one, and I think there will be some changes made there. But we should resist the effort to close those borders. Now, I know some are advocating the way to deal with this is to penalize ourselves. And we can easily do that by putting a $3 tipping fee. Now, I'm mystified by this, and maybe I'm not smart enough to understand it, but a lot of the contracts aren't even going to allow that to be passed on to Canadian trash haulers anyway. So we're going to impose a tax on our citizens, our individuals, and our businesses we're not going to have any impact on Canadian trash coming in. We're going to make the cost of doing business in Michigan higher for both families, many who are struggling in the economy we have had, as well as businesses. We know what's happened to manufacturing. So I think we need to seriously look at this. I don't understand where we're going with that. That doesn't make any sense at all. We need to continue to step up and urge our congressional delegation to use every means possible to put through the Secretary of State's Department at the federal level pressure on Canada. I met with Canadian officials. I think you're going to see some big changes from Toronto coming, but we need to really be careful about penalizing ourselves trying to solve that. Let me just finish by saying, as I mentioned earlier, we have a very, very top-down prescriptive system in this country. We have made an awful lot of environmental gain, I think most people would agree, the last 20 years, 30 years. We had rivers catching on fire in Ohio. We had city blocks you couldn't see across because of smog. The environment has gotten much better. We have not solved every challenge in front of us, but we need to think very carefully about continuing to try to solve everything by more regulation. Regulations, I'll share with you a discussion I had with and I won't use a name, but a person that worked in hazardous waste in Michigan DEQ, who I respected, highly knowledgeable. This person spent their entire life on hazardous waste, and they told me, you know, Russ, I can't even understand these regulations, much less tell people exactly what they have to comply with. They're that complicated. A single air permit for an auto assembly plant here in Lansing is 600 pages in length, just for the air permit. And so it's very, very prescriptive, very regulatory. We need to tap the strength of the marketplace. We need to be innovative. You know, I was thinking the other day, the way we do environmental protection in this country, if we were building automobiles like that, I don't think any of us would have bothered to go to the Detroit Auto Show. How many went to the auto show this year? Probably a number of us did. Because we'd still be looking at Model Ts. We wouldn't have much to look at if we were built cars the way we do environmental regulation. We stifle innovation. We prescribe everything that has to be done and how it has to be done. And if we're going to make that environmental gain, which I think most citizens in Michigan really want to see happen, we're going to have to do it in a cost-effective manner. We're going to have to tap the marketplace. We're going to have to be innovative. And there's a lot of ways to do that. And I hope that debate will get some light over the coming months, and I intend to try to shed some light on it.